Welcome to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome, everybody, to the Gym Podcast. It's your host, as always, Randy Darsh. And joining me, as always, we have the one, the only, Genocide Up.
How's it going?
Yeah, so this Jimbo's on IR this week, so it's really me that's leading the Gym Podcast this week. I wanted to keep the flow going, kind of keep the intro exactly the same, so hopefully we did Jimbo some justice in his week off. Hopefully he's enjoying it to the best that he can. Anyway, we had a pretty... I'm going to be honest about last week. We had so many close calls. It was a real case of just... It's frustrating to see so many close calls and almost upsets not pan out. I guess we can go ahead and jump directly into last week's games and discuss them. I kind of actually wanted to talk about Boise State versus San Diego State on Friday night. Boise State is sitting at 7-1. They won 56-24. And that was while their running back, Ashton Ginty, was actually injured. And it shows that they have a well-rounded team. Damn it, side up. Do you think Boise State has locked up their Group of Five playoff spot?
Oh, they can easily sell. That's the wonders of a Group of Five playoff bid. As Mickey Mouse, as some may claim it to be, it also allows for just about any type of individual upset just sinking a team for a temporary amount of time. Even one with as wide of a gap as Boise State, I feel like if they lose one, it's not a shoo-in that they'll make it. And obviously, of course, if they don't win their conference, you know, then that's a whole big story. That just leads to a whole Pandora's box. Who in the world gets in?
If they don't win their conference, there's no chance. And what's funny is Colorado State is in the Mountain West as well, and they're undefeated in conference, and they do not play each other in the regular season. So, I mean, we're really headed for a collision course between Colorado State and Boise State. And this is kind of what I love about the expanded playoffs, as much hate as it gets, is that we're in a situation where Colorado State is technically still alive. Meanwhile, Florida State was, you know, out starting week two, which is kind of funny. But
there is never a proper time to not talk about their downfall. It's really surprising to me. We all thought going into this offseason, you know, oh, Billy Napier's cooked. He's done. Finished. He's going to get two wins this year because his schedule is so difficult. And as it turns out, the other guy on the other side of the panhandle is going to be the one to not get canned, obviously, but he's going to have a bit of a warm seat after this year, I would think, because, I mean, 2-10.
He can certainly turn it around fast. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of the game nowadays is you can get that turned around real quick, but you have to know how to play the portal and balance that with real recruiting and everything. I don't know if he's going to be able to do it or if he really caught lightning in a bottle last year. We'll see how that goes next year.
All a matter of getting the right transfers, the right seniors, get some talent and really some experience. But it's going to be interesting. Will Norvell have this pattern of having like an even odd year type of situation where he's got some downs and some ups, a roller coaster, so to speak? You have big highs and then really low lows because you just can't balance.
Exactly. There was another game. Speaking of Florida-related teams, you know, we had Georgia play Florida in, what is it, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And it was such a close game with Florida's third-string quarterback. It's almost considered like a quality loss for Florida. And Florida, I mean, I get they're sitting at 4-4 and are kind of disappointed in the season. It's weird how I think this game literally got Napier or saved Napier's job for at least another year. Do you think Napier and Florida is in a better position than Florida State?
That is a very question. I think considering I've seen a few tidbits, some words around the grapevine, a lot of Florida's NIL is around the underclassmen right now. So their boosters are anticipating, you know, a great resurgence of the program in about next year or 2 years after that, because Lagway is still a freshman, I believe, true freshman.
And he's played well.
He played pretty good. It's a darn shame he got season-ending injury on the big stage like that. But yeah, I would absolutely say, assuming that the injury did not hinder Lagway's quality as a player, you know, because those types of injuries can really get into your mental. But if that didn't mess with him, I do think Florida's in a much better position than Florida State's in right now. And now, of course, I say this, and then we all just see Florida State somehow win in the rivalry game this year.
That's how rivalry week works in college football, man. I guess one Beautiful. Thing that kind of interests me about this is the fact that, like, it because you can turn it around very quickly nowadays in college football, people almost expect that as a foregone conclusion. And if it's not a quick turnaround, then they just assume that you're not going to do it and you failed. And I don't necessarily like that mentality. I don't know.
Oh, no, it's really bad. It allows a lot more programs to just consistently be in a Kern style of mediocrity. You just give people 2 years and like, oh, you can't recruit the transfer portal at a minimum? Get out of here. And then
you still need time to build the program. Exactly. Dude, you can build, you can turn things around a little bit faster, but you still got to be patient with certain coaches, especially depending on the state of the program they're inheriting and maybe what kind of changes they're making. And this kind of leads me to the next game I wanted to talk about. And I know Jimbo really was probably cooking up a rant for this, but we're probably going to disagree with Jimbo on this. But Iowa defeated Wisconsin 42-10. Wisconsin's 5-4. We all know what Jimbo's stance is on Luke Fickle. He could be kind of up and down week to week on Luke Fickle, to say the least. But he's in full get rid of Fickle mode. And this is my message to Jimbo, since he's literally not able to respond live anymore, at least for this week, is that you need to be patient with him. Let him do his work. Get your NIL together. Let things work. Let him develop. It's going to take more than 2 years for you to see the full fruits of the labor. You saw a lot of really good things the past 3 weeks, and you need to let it build instead of putting do-or-die kind of pressure on him. Just like let it happen. Because you can just tell with a coach's demeanor sometimes if they're right. And I kind of get a good vibe off Luke Fickle in that sense. I don't know if I'm just kind of being, you know, a little too hippie-ish, I guess. I don't know.
A little too much of what people call the bloomers, the optimists.
I am a bloomer. I'm a perpetual optimist.
I'm surprised it's only been like 2 years for Fickle. I'm surprised this is only his second year. Yeah, I'd say give him at least one more. Even if like the wheels fall off and they somehow lose to the funny boatman out in Minnesota.
I couldn't. Personally, I'm not going to go off on Minnesota fans. We have a nice Minnesota listener, so I'm going to be nice. But you guys got to give him another year. Let him work. Let him do his thing. You know, don't be impatient. If you're impatient, that's how you end up with a bad hire and just end up as a perpetual 6-6 program. And I know y'all don't want that. You got to give him time to work.
You get impatient boosters, you just ruin your program. Talk to Alabama in the mid-2000s. Talk to Texas for 15 years. Talk to Tennessee for 15 years.
Exactly. You know,
talk to Auburn now.
Exactly. There you go. Perfect examples. Moving on, we're going to talk to the Big Ten a little bit more. Ohio State defeated Penn State 20-13. This happens every single year where Ohio State is in a one-score game with Penn State and somehow wins despite looking terrible. It actually angers me how Ohio State gets away with this, and are the most fraudulent team I've ever seen. Will Howard is terrible. Ohio State's not a great team. Penn State's probably a better team than them, but it bothers me. I don't even know what else to say about this game.
It's pretty simple. I feel like Penn State's got a monkey on their back, and that monkey is literally just Ohio State. I know James Franklin has a terrible record against, you know, top five teams and whatnot, but a majority of those are Ohio State. I feel like if he would just get out of his own head, you know, if they could get out of their own heads and also maybe not have to play them at Big Noon Kickoff every year, thank you, Fox, they could eventually win one. But no, I don't know what it is about it, but they just can't deal with Bucknuts. I don't know. I don't get it.
It's weird because I think a big part of it is Penn State's. I think Jimbo talked about this last week. Their offense is just never threatening. You never have to worry about a deep, huge, explosive play from Penn State's offense. And your defense can be so much more comfortable in that. Compare that to when a team plays Alabama. even when we struggle, our offense is struggling, you're kind of like clinching the whole time every time we have the ball, because you know at any moment an 80-yard touchdown is just waiting to be ripped off. Penn State, you have no threat of that.
You're all on prey, baby.
Yep. All right. So moving on, we have South Carolina 44, Texas A&M 20. I know it's not quite Texas A&M over yet, but I mean, this kind of gives me South Carolina is sitting at 5-3, and I'm kind of wondering at 5-3, they still have to play at Vanderbilt, which is now a quality win, very good team. They have to play Missouri and they play Clemson. South Carolina has been a sneaky, really good team that's just had some unfortunate bounces of the ball. I mean, 2-point game at Alabama, 3-point game versus LSU where the refs kind of, you know, meddled.
That was a major refs moment, though. That was rough to watch.
And the games they have won, they've blown out their opponents in SEC games. Oklahoma, they blew out Oklahoma, blew out Texas A&M, blew out Kentucky when Kentucky still had hope. I mean, are we looking at a situation where South Carolina, a team like South Carolina, could realistically make the college football playoff?
Are they? I mean, with three, I don't think any three-loss team can make the playoffs right now because they have three losses, right? I'm not tripping on that.
They have three losses. They have 5-3 with three great games left.
Unless a lot of crazy crap happens, I don't think there's much chance. They'd have to do some really wacky stuff, and there had to be a lot of other teams doing a lot of other wacky stuff, because there's so many 1-2 loss teams, not to mention the 5 undefeateds that are left. And when you have five conference champions automatically getting a bid when South Carolina doesn't have any shot, basically, at getting to a conference title game, it's really tough for teams with less than two losses to get in my opinion, unless they somehow win their conference. And in the SEC, that's just not going to happen when you have a 16-team conference and not everybody plays everybody, so a few teams will have easier schedules and can get away with having at most two losses just because of how easy it is. In the case of, you know, good old Liza, Texas, I just don't see it. I don't think that I can. I think they can get ranked. I think they could get ranked pretty close, but I don't think they'll be able to get into the top 12 where they would have to be in order to make it.
I kind of get what you're saying. I kind of wonder if there's going to be a certain line of demarcation where you see like, okay, you know, we're going to put in five SEC teams, but we're not going to let them be below 10-2 kind of thing. Because you have to remember, well, actually, let's go ahead and lead this into this point that I kind of wanted to talk about was, how many teams of each conference do you think will make the playoff?
All right, let's see here. So,
I'll give mine first while you think about it. I've got SEC 5, Big Ten 4, ACC 1, Big 12 1. And then I guess, I don't know if that's right, though. 5-4 and then 1-1-1.
Yeah, that, if you have 5 for one conference and 4 for another, yeah, you just got
the SEC is going to at least get 4. And I think the Big Ten will at least get 3, if not 4, but more than likely 4.
It would take a lot of collapses for the Big Ten to not have 4. All the schedules are just, they just so happen to be separated. Because, like, Indiana, for example, their last really tough game, assuming they don't blow it to Michigan, is at Ohio State. 11-1, I think they're in. You know, Penn State, assuming they don't like sell at the end of the year, I think they're in, because I don't believe they have much of any tough game left. Oregon is firmly in. Ohio State, obviously, unless Ryan Day does the unthinkable. I think it's a firm 4 for the Big Ten. SEC, I could definitely see getting 4, but they have to be careful. A lot of the teams in the SEC have to be careful because a lot of them have two losses already. If they get one more loss, I mean, it's Jover. It's done. Finished.
But let me bring this point up. I know people hate SEC homerism, but let's just be real here for a second. South Carolina is sitting. I have to literally count down the freaking standings to find out what place they're in. They're in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They're in 9th place in the SEC. But let's be honest here. Would you not take South Carolina over Big 12 number 2?
Who is Big 12 number? Is that K-State?
I think it is Kansas State. It's either Kansas State or Colorado. No, it is Iowa State.
It is Iowa State. That's right, because BYU is undefeated. I could see it. I mean, Iowa State has beaten Iowa, and we all see what Iowa can do. So, I mean, I think that'd be a good toss-up game. But I get your point. 2 versus 9 should not be competitive, but this is college football.
That is the world we live in. Granted, the Big 12 is probably the weakest of the new power conferences.
Yeah, that's just the way the cookie crumbled this year. The team predicted to finish last in their conference is undefeated right now. So, you know.
Yeah, that's how it is. You. That's how the game goes.
Yeah.
But I'd just be curious to see. I mean, there's just no telling how these standings are going to shake up and how many 2-loss, maybe if a 3-loss team sneaks in, just how that's going to go. I'm very curious to watch the CFP rankings as they go on. As we all know, I mean, the CFP ranking, the first rankings coming out, was the most important thing to happen on Tuesday. So
that is very true. Actually, you know what I just realized, Randy? You're forgetting a team. You're forgetting Notre Dame in your initial
prediction. Oh, God, I forgot. They only have 1 loss to NIU. This is what I'm saying. We're going to have to really see how some of these games shake out. We'll talk more about this as we go into next week's games. We'll go ahead and finish up this past week's games just to kind of finish it out. I believe the only other one I really wanted to talk about was Indiana and Michigan State. I think we really need to continue to give Indiana their due respect. This team is scary, and I just don't understand why.
The Coach Cignetti effect, man, he's really good. He's just a winner. He's just a winner. He wins. He wins games. Up until Ohio State, of course.
I hate that that game is going to be at Ohio State in 2 weeks. Because I really think Indiana would have a great chance at home. They do play Michigan. And I know Michigan is, 5-4? But, 5-4 Michigan at undefeated Indiana, you still want to pick Michigan but based off brand name alone and probably technical talent on paper. But people need to remember that Cignetti brought a lot of talent with him from JMU. So it's not like Indiana. They're not a bunch of ragtag players. Like, they have a legit team of upperclassmen players.
It's more than a bunch of O-linemen from the Midwest in a prayer. It's basically James Madison, and last year's James Madison team was pretty decent last I checked. It's a decent squad, and he's a really good coach that's, I guess, propped these boys up to play big league football. It's wonderful. It's probably the best story of the year in terms of a team rebuild, because Indiana's, their history in football does not exist. At least with BYU, they have an interesting title back in 40 years ago, but Indiana has nothing. They have nothing. And
that's
now
true. I'm happy for them.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. It's good to see a Cinderella team that actually looks to have some weight to them, some punch, some oomph. Make the people sweat.
Very true. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to next week's games. I'm ready to start covering those. By the way, I wanted to give this was their Super Bowl award for last week too, Ohio State, for beating Penn State. Congratulations, Ohio State. You're definitely not fraudulent.
I think my Super Bowl of the week would have to be not for a team, but for a coach, of course, Billy Napier. Congratulations, buddy. You kept it close enough with Georgia that you not only beat the spread, but you saved your job for another few years. You earned this one. You earned it.
At least one more. all right, let's go ahead and move on. The first game I'm going to talk about is actually going to be my lock of the week. So it's going to be Florida sitting at 4-4 at Texas sitting at 7-1, number 5. My lock of the week is that Florida takes down Texas. I have a few reasons as to why. One, the Billy Napier effect. I think this team is really bought in and believes in themselves. I understand they have some issues at the quarterback position. Was the DJ Lagway injury, was that actually a season-ending injury? Because I thought it was just something minor.
Oh, did they actually make it to something minor then? Let me see. Oh, it looked a lot worse than that, I'm going to be honest. If it was minor enough for Lagway to come back for Texas, I could see it. But big if there. I really have no idea. I genuinely thought with how it looked,
It's a grade 2 hamstring strain, so
I would.
A hamstring. I mean, it's not that severe. He could play through it. What is Graham Mertz status?
I think he's done for the year, isn't he? He's
got that, I think he is done for the year, and his career is done. That's right. He tore his ACL. I think even regardless of the quarterback situation, I mean, screw it. Look at Carson Beck throwing 3 interceptions and still blowing. He threw 0 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and still blew out Texas. The team has bought into Billy Napier, and I think the team is very motivated, which is kind of odd to see given their situation. So I believe they're going to beat Texas, and I think Texas, they're one of those flashy teams that can draw up a bunch of really cool plays, but then once they really kind of meet an equal talent level, they kind of don't know how to respond per se, because like they just look physically dominated by Georgia, to be honest with you. Like Georgia just had their number in every which way.
It's definitely one of those teams where like if they, even if they only quote unquote only struggle with Florida for 3.5 quarters or 3 quarters, there's going to be a lot of people looking at their ranking and saying, who in the world is their best win? There's not much. Like, the best one is genuinely probably at Vanderbilt by 3 at this point. So
yeah, that's Vanderbilt's their best win.
You know, it's not going to look good. The ranking will probably, it's going to put them on some, I wouldn't say the thinnest of ice, but it's going to make things a little shaky if Texas A&M beats them by a large enough margin and the quality of the rest of the top 12 is good enough. Texas could see themselves screwing their way out of the playoffs if they don't get their act together.
Very true. Next up, we have number 3, 7-1 Georgia at number 16, 7-2 Ole Miss.
Kiffin's Super Bowl, if you could ever win it.
Do you think Ole Miss can actually pull this off?
No. I will never trust Lane Kiffin until he actually does it. It's like a James Franklin moment. I mean, the big game.
I was thinking that exact same thing, dude.
Yeah, it's you know, I want him to. It would be so funny if he could do it. If he could finish what what we have started and beat Georgia. Beat somebody. Beat anybody, please. But they've already screwed up twice to much worse teams than Georgia, in my opinion, in specifically Kentucky, on homecoming, inexcusable stuff. Like, even if they prop themselves up to play for this game, I don't think Georgia's going to just take them lightly. It's a matter of whether or not Carson Beck throws another 3 interceptions this game, though. It's doable. I just don't see it. I think Lane Kiffin will find a way to lose. He always does. Always will.
He is like the James Franklin of the SEC. I mean, it's a little bit more excusable because Ole Miss doesn't quite have as much to work with. The thing is,
I mean, he literally brought them up to heights they have not seen since before integration. So I gotta give him a little bit of fun. But at the same time, you eventually gotta break it.
Raise that ceiling, he's gonna have. It takes like almost a decade of this type of 10-2 success to finally raise the ceiling enough to where you can break through it a little bit.
Right.
Like, it legit takes that long to build a program. You can get a program to be 10-2, 9-3 pretty consistently, but getting over that hump to be like 11-1 and competing for championships takes like 10 times the effort just to get to 9-3, 10-2, no matter how bad of a spot you're starting from.
Because by the point you get that, getting near good enough and you see it, you're going to have people nipping at your heels and your team's not going to be ready for it because they don't know how to. It's a matter of knowing how to win and staying at that near mountaintop. It's really tough. It's a real underestimated aspect of it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Moving on now to the Big Ten in the 2:30 slot, we had the, I keep wanting to say SEC on CBS game. It's the Big Ten on CBS game now. We have 5-4 Michigan at undefeated number 8, 9-0 Indiana. Indiana keeps Windiana-ing, right? Are we in agreement?
Who's your daddy, baby? Indiana's gonna roll. I think Cignetti's got him in a really good spot. I am on the Kool-Aid of the Crimson and Cream Indiana Hoosiers. I think
just
they're gonna
do
a great thing.
They keep destroying teams. They haven't had a single close game all year. And
yeah,
just
the
watching them destroy these Big Ten teams, like, you know, it's impressive to watch. They're not a fluke team.
No. No, they're doing more than just squeaking by a schedule that's not as strong as some other teams are. They are killing it. They're just blasting through everybody. every single game has been won by multiple possessions, double digits, which is not common to have happen. And they're doing it with ease. It's not an Iowa State situation where they have a bunch of squeaky calls. No, this is a team. This is a true hoss of a team. I am very excited to see what they can do in this last stretch of November. If they can pull through, not screw up.
I just want somebody, please expose Ohio State. Please, one big team, please do it. They're so fraudulent, and it makes me mad. Oh, okay. I really actually have another game I want to talk about. It's Army, 8-0, ranked 25, undefeated Army at 5-3 North Texas. How patriotic and cool would it feel for Army to go to the college football playoff?
That, I'd be down. Problem is...
they're in a conference.
They are in a conference now, but they need Boise State to lose one in order for them to have a chance. I don't think they get in at
12-0. I mean, oh, they do? Okay, so here's the thing.
Well, 13,
Army does play Notre Dame at home in 2 weeks. If they can simply keep it close...
I think they have to do more than keep it close. I think they have to. Army has to win. I think they have to win out just because, like, Boise State is already, even with the one loss that Boise State has, they have pull momentum. They have just such a huge pull momentum. Like, Army's, I think, 25th in the rankings right now.
In a weird way. So I know the term quality loss gets thrown around as a meme, and I've talked about it on the podcast previously. But I think they have, like, it would be a quality loss to barely lose to Notre Dame at home in the sense that it would get people's attention. It would get voters' attention to say, oh, hey, this team actually is worth voting for. Like, they could actually move up with the loss, I think, with a close loss to Notre Dame. And we saw what happened when Notre Dame played NIU.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely – it's possible. I would love to see Army just flat-out win. But if they do lose, it'd be nice to see them not get – punished for having a close game with the toughest team they'll face all year. Because
I'm just saying, be so patriotic, you know, to watch them in the playoff.
As much as it's fun to clown on the NIU game, that sort of woke them up. It's sort of like their almost 2015 game for them, it feels like. Because ever since that game, Notre Dame's been hauling it. I don't know if I can get Army to beat Notre Dame just because of how tough that opponent is. I guess that'd be for next week, but still, that's Army would be pretty fun to watch in a playoff game. You get some option ball in there, get some people sweating, not knowing what the world
is. So that's another factor you just brought up, is that Notre Dame actually has looked like they've looked really good. They're not just squeaking by tough games. They actually are convincingly destroying opponents.
They just blasted Navy about a week ago. Like,
Navy has one loss, and that loss is to Notre Dame, so they're also a really good team. Moving on, we have 6-2, and they only have one loss in the Big 12. Colorado playing at Texas Tech, who is 6-3, who just beat Iowa State. Colorado is now tied for second in the Big 12.
What a wild!
How funny would it be? Colorado in the college football playoff. Just think about these scenarios. How mad will everybody be, and how fun will that be to watch?
Shoot, I would probably be a little fuming after all the drama that happened with prime time in the off season, you know, with the rumors.
But he'd be proving himself right.
To somehow right that ship and make the culture at least somewhat sound enough to do what they're doing right now. It's impressive. I don't care how weak the Big 12 is, to do that quick of a cleanup in a span of a few months is obscene. It's never heard of. You typically have that stuff stink around the program for the whole year, but somehow they've kept it tight, they've kept it clean, they've figured out their crap, and they're ready to keep going. It's a fun sight to behold. I'm glad they figured things out, and it would be quite a spectacle to see the amount of people going, you know, tears onto the floor, typing on the computers at like 100 BPM.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. People are going to be so mad. People love to hate on Deion. Meanwhile, I'm not going to go into certain other coaches. So I wanted to actually ask this question. Do you think, based on the, we have NIL now, as you know, you can actually build up a brand in college football. Do you think Shedeur Sanders, Shiloh Sanders, and Travis Hunter actually stay for one more year?
Because
they can make a lot of money at Colorado with a lot of guaranteed money before they try it in the NFL. Because if you go to the NFL, you can get cut after one year if you don't make the cut.
If they're a first-round grade, I don't think they'll go. Because there is a lot of money in NIL, but I don't think there's first-round grade type of NFL money. I think Shedeur is probably gone because he's a pretty highly rated NFL.
But he doesn't need the money. Like, Deion's got a ton. That's kind of the thing. Like, I could see him also just wanting to play with his dad for one more year, just to kind of enjoy that.
Yeah, I do think there's no chance in the world Travis Hunter stays. I think he is just flat out gone. I think Shedeur is likely gone, but I could see it. I could see him staying, and then Shiloh, you said? Shiloh said?
Yeah, Shiloh's probably going to stay.
I think he'll stay another year. I think he'll stay at least one more.
But I also think like with Shedeur and Travis Hunter are both gone. Do you think Deion stays another year just for Shiloh?
Oh. Wouldn't it be so spicy? He's like, yeah, I'm bouncing out to, I don't even know where, like the NFL or something, and Shiloh's just vibing in Colorado. I don't think he'd do that to his kid. I would sure hope not, but you never know. Primetime is a very unpredictable.
He cares about his children. I know he's kind of got an ego, but he does care about his kids. He just doesn't care about anybody but his kids.
It's true. And Travis Hunt. He's got to care about that.
I want to be a little bit fair to him. I did see a clip of him and Jackson State really comforting a player after like they dropped a game losing pass. And he seems to really buy into the whole caring about his players thing. So I can see why the team's culture has improved. It's just hard to... I feel like a lot of the hate is a little over the top with him because there are so many worse, more asshole coaches in college football right now than Deion.
There's a lot. It's a lot of it is the clips too. I mean, I think we've all seen the one where he sort of kicks out a player based on a vote, and it's all on cameras and stuff. The question I would have is like, how much of that is it like a Nick Saban effect where you have just the big highlight points of someone getting chewed out or whatever compared to the 90%? How big is the Deion iceberg? Because Saban had one of those as well. You'd only see the brashness of him, but you didn't see the caring side. How big is that iceberg for Deion is what I'm wondering. You know, how kind is he to the players away from the big...
And how much does he care about, like when the cameras aren't around? I don't think he knew the camera was around in the situation I was discussing. Like, how much more does he care about his son, and how much does he elevate his son above the rest of the team beyond the fact that his son is the star quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I see takes, especially on the college football subreddit, where they think that Deion doesn't care about anybody but Shedeur and Shiloh and Travis Hunter, but I just don't think that's true necessarily. I think he's more personable than a lot of people give him credit for, and he does care.
Yeah, they do call it Reddit moment for a reason, right?
That's very true. Very true. No. All right, so we have the big game of the week, elimination game for all intents and purposes. We have 6-2 Alabama at 6-2 LSU. And we're going to try our best to be not biased here on the Jim Podcast.
Yo, the Libby Dunn Rizzler's in this game day for Saturday. It's going to be crazy.
Oh, Libby Dunn.
Oh, the Rizzler. No.
How do you feel about our chances going into this game?
If Nussmeier plays as bad as he did against Texas A&M, I think we've got a pretty good shot. Of course, it being a road game is going to do some major damage. You know, a lot of questions regarding the quality of Alabama's football program right now, in the past 2 years in general, regarding how they do on the road. But I think I like our chances. I think our defense is getting figured out. It's figuring themselves out. They're getting it together. And I feel like that's going to be enough to win this game, even if it's going to be some ugly match like we used to have back when Les Miles was around, like some 10-6, 10-0 type of game, 9-6, something low scoring potentially, because you mix in Milrow's struggles on the road, especially in Knoxville, tough, hard environment. You got Death Valley at night. How much has he improved dealing with the hostile road environment? If he hasn't done much, then we aren't going to be scoring that many points. I'm going to be honest. But can LSU score that many points? Because Nussmeier's not great. I'm going to be honest.
What makes me feel good about this game is the fact that I feel confident that our team could win in a number of different ways. I feel like we could win if the game is a high-scoring shootout, we'd be able to win it. If it's the slow-paced defensive slugfest, we could win it. If it comes down to special teams, I feel like we could win it. That's what makes me feel really good about our chances. Another couple things I wanted to point out. I agree with everything you said 100%. Our record and our track record versus quarterbacks that are just quote-unquote okay or mediocre, we feast on those types of quarterbacks. Our defense this year has feasted on them. We'll get 3 interceptions a game versus them. And Nussmeier is the type of quarterback that I feel like we could potentially do that to even on the road. You saw how we just rattled Carson Beck. You saw what we did to those poor backup quarterbacks for Wisconsin and Missouri. And those were experienced. At least one of them was an experienced backup. So we have a very opportunistic defense that loves getting interceptions almost as much as Garrett Nussmeier loves throwing them. Makes me feel really good. Another couple of points is we had the week off for Milrow to get healthy and for the team to really prepare for this. And I think that came at the perfect time. But like you said, it is a road game, and we have struggled mightily on the road this year.
Especially on offense. I mean, we did pretty good against Tennessee's old wonderkind redshirt freshman, Nico. I am Oliva. I'm going to call him that just in case he ever goes to the portal. Kind of funny. He threw 3 picks in the first half, and what did we do with it? We scored 0 points off of it. That's how you lose football games.
But I think with this week off, we would actually be way more prepared. We'll have some stuff up our sleeve on offense. That's what I really think would be the difference maker, is that week off and our ability to game plan.
Here's hoping. I don't want to lose to Brian Kelly again. I'd rather beat
me neither.
Man.
I don't either.
It really is anyone's game, though. I feel like this could be one of those classic games that we looked back on, sort of like the TJ Yeldon screen pass, the overtime games that we have had ample amounts of times. You know, it feels good, even though this one is less of a winner goes to the SEC title game and more of a winner stays alive in the playoff race type of deal.
I do actually really like that. The expanded playoff, like in any other year, with the both of us being 6-2, it's not even as interesting of a game, so to speak. Mm. Like, there's way much more on the line this year because of that expansion.
Right. One of the few good things from this major playoff shakeup that they've had.
Another game I wanted to bring up, actually, was South Carolina at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt also being 6-3. I know I talked about does South Carolina have a real shot at the playoffs? 5-3. How is it even possible for Vanderbilt to go to the playoffs?
No. Long story short, it's over. However,
but
they
come
could
on,
go.
Come on, come on, come on, come on. They beat Alabama, 1-score game with Texas. If they beat South Carolina, LSU, and Tennessee to close off the season, they have to be picked. I guess you're saying they're not going to be able to do that.
They'd have to – I mean, even with that, there's so many teams that would have to lose. There's just so many. They're not even – like, yes, it would be really good to win out against that competition because all those 3 teams are indeed bowl-eligible teams. Those would all be bowl wins, essentially, that Vanderbilt would have. But especially Tennessee, that right now is a top 10 win for them. I don't know if that'll last very long. They're playing Georgia in about a week or so. But even with that in mind, who would they jump? There's so many teams in front of them right now because they're
not even
winning.
There's so much chaos left to be had, dude. There's
and
so
what we said
teams.
About last November. We saw what happened with last November.
Exactly.
Not much. Hopefully there will be a lot of chaos. That's what November is all about. November is about having the chaos happen. And I missed that last year because there was one top 10 upset last year. And it was Louisville. So does that really count?
Exactly. I get what you're saying. And this year has been a lot more chaotic. So we're going to see how things play out down the stretch. Did you have any games personally that I've not yet mentioned that you wanted to talk about?
Nothing major on the national scheme of things, though. Shout-outs to the revival of the good old Holy War with BYU and Utah. It'd be really funny if Utah would go and beat the Cougars in what is Utah's probably worst year in a very long time. Another one from the mid-major side, of course. Navy has lost two straight games, the blowout to Notre Dame and the loss to Rice, of all things. They lost to a food. They're going to play South Florida. I believe that's on the road. If they lose that game, that team could be in a free fall from their high highs.
That's what happens. Sometimes teams will lose and just free fall, lose all motivation. You gotta be mentally tough, you know?
And it's that mental grit. You'd think the military academy would have that, but apparently if they lose to South Florida, they might not. Who knows?
Who knows? All right. So this has been a great episode. Jimbo is on IR this week, as I mentioned. Thank you, Bemisite Up, for coming on and being willing to do this emergency gym podcast. I had a great time. Did you have any closing thoughts?
The only thing I'm going to have to say, of course, is Bama by 50, baby. We're going to the win it all. No more losses. Here we go. One new week at a time. We've got it. It's going to be great.
All right.
I'm looking forward to this November slate. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be really fun. All right. Until next time, everybody. See you all next week. And as always, on Wisconsin.
Roll Tide!